Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
You're going to hear lots about wilderness this year because the American wilderness system is 40 years old. Some of that money that you're paying on your taxes today goes to Washington, will go to wilderness, and it is political. This weekend in Salt Lake City, a diverse arena of voices will be talking about wilderness, preserving nature in a political world. 2004 is a year that will decide many futures. We'll talk with someone who has thought about this a lot when we come back on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Yes, indeed, welcome back. We're going to be talking about wilderness in this segment with Robert M. Keiter, who is the Wallace Stegner Professor of Law and Director of the Wallace Stegner Center for Land, Resources, and the Environment at the University of Utah in Salt Lake City. He was honored as a senior Fulbright Scholar at the Tribhuvan University Institute of Law in Kathmandu, Nepal. He has published regularly in professional journals and is the author of various books about wilderness, public lands, and law. It's a pleasure to welcome you to the Wild Side News. Robert, before we begin, tell us briefly about Wallace Stegner, the namesake of the Stegner Center.
Yes, and thank you for having me on, Sydney.
It's my pleasure to have you here, Robert.
Wallace Stegner is the namesake of the Wallace Stegner Center for Land, Resources, and the Environment at the University of Utah. He wrote many books and often about the American West, both about it as a place and about the people who live here and about its history. He also wrote passionately about the wild side of the American West, and in particular the concepts of wilderness and the need to protect some of the remaining open space in the West. He was both a historian, a novelist, an essayist, and a general commentator on the American scene, as well as a Pulitzer Prize-winning author, I might add.
His books are always an amazing read, and I guess if there is such a thing as a Stegnerian, I guess I'm one. Is there such, do people refer to themselves as Stegnerians?
I have heard the term occasionally, and I've certainly run into numerous people who have read some, or in some cases almost all of what Wallace Stegner has written, and everyone refers to him and to his writings very fondly.
For people who have a sense of the American West, Robert Stegner probably was one of the finest voices to really capture that and interpret it. Well, let's talk about this weekend, which convenes the 9th Annual Stegner Center Symposium. And, of course, you're the president of the Stegner Center. This year's theme, and it is so timely as we celebrate the 40th anniversary of the signing of the Wilderness Act, is Wilderness, Preserving Nature in a Political World. The list of speakers is quite interesting, encompassing high-level spokespersons from the White House and the Interior Department, I'll say the Interior Department and to be more specific, through community organizers, and it includes Dave Foreman, who most of our listeners will recognize as a founder of sort of the eco-action process. This actually reflects the vision of the Stegner Center, all of these people coming together. Tell us about that vision.
Well, in terms of the Stegner Center itself, we envision it as a forum for the discussion and education of the general public on the whole range of natural resource public land issues that confront the American West and the country as a whole, and even beyond that, in as much as some of our programs have had an international flavor too. Besides doing the symposium, which we do annually, we do a series of lectures, have a Stegner Fellow program in place, and conduct a weekly green bag series too.
Tell us a little bit about the particulars on this this weekend's event, where it is, what time, and also is the public invited? And talk a little bit as well about some of the major speakers that will be there.
Yes, thank you. The as you noted, the title of this year's symposium is Wilderness, Preserving Nature in a Political World, consistent with the mission of the Stegner Center to serve as this interdisciplinary forum. We've tried to convene a range of speakers covering, to address, I should say, the wilderness issue from a variety of different perspectives. The program includes a philosopher kicking off our discussion, Max Olschlager, who's published a philosophical book entitled The Idea of Wilderness, and then goes on to include a discussion of legal dimensions of wilderness. We have a county commissioner from Northwest Colorado addressing the perspective of local communities and wilderness protection. An economist, Ray Rasker, from the Sonoran Institute, addressing the actual on-the-ground economics that we're experiencing in many parts of the West, where we see things like tourism, recreation, and amenity values beginning to displace, in some cases even displacing, the traditional extractive industries. We talk about the politics of wilderness preservation with a member of the Department of the Interior from the Clinton administration, John Leschi. We also talk about the Bush administration's wilderness policies. Lynn Scarlett, Assistant Secretary of the Interior for Management Policy and Budget, will address that topic. We look at biodiversity and its relationship to wilderness and recreation, how it interfaces with wilderness and the wilderness designation debate, questions about alternatives to wilderness. We also explore the new collaborative efforts that have sprung up, both to address natural resource issues generally, but also to address the wilderness issues, with some success in a few areas. And Jeremy Garncars will talk about how that evolved in southern Nevada. We conclude with Dave Foreman addressing the topic of rewilding North America, consistent with his new endeavor, which is a spinoff from the Wildlands Institute. He's now the president and managing director of the Rewilding Institute, I believe is the name of the organization.
Yes, now for people who may be interested in actually attending, you can go to the Wildside News website, today's page, and there are links to the symposium. Why don't you talk a little bit? This is open to the public, is that correct?
Yes, indeed it is. It is open to the public. We'll be convening on Friday with the list of speakers that I just went over, and we'll carry through a little more than half to two-thirds of the day on Saturday, where we will address specifically the Utah wilderness experience, and more particularly the various issues and controversies that are involved in wilderness designation and protection and wilderness study area management for BLM lands in southern Utah.
Certainly Utah is an issue these days. I know for myself, having spent some real quality time in southern Utah, if it was up to me, you'd bubble wrap the whole place. It's just an amazing area. Well, let's move on to your book. You have a new book out, which is called Keeping the Faith, Ecosystems, Democracy, and America's Public Lands. And certainly that defines very much the nature of this symposium. But let's talk about your approach, because you've really done a lot of research, and you are proposing some means for people to begin to work together to address the issues of preserving wilderness in the future.
Yes, I appreciate your mentioning the book. The full main title of the book is actually Keeping Faith with Nature. It was published a few months ago by Yale University Press, and it represents a number of years work, research, on-the-ground contact, etc., trying to understand where we are currently with public land policy in the American West, how we got there, and what the future might hold. In the book, in a broad sense, I try to understand the origins and evolution of ecological management, something that virtually all of the federal public land management agencies have embraced in one form or another, sometimes not precisely by that name, and that the courts in significant respects have virtually brought onto the agencies in interpreting some of the laws that are on the books these days. I also spend a good deal of time exploring the new collaborative process movement that has sprung up over the last decade or so across the West in watersheds and in other specific locations where a variety of different citizens who represent a variety of different interests have come together in an effort to try to resolve some of the tough issues that seem to keep festering, that seem to pop up in court periodically to see if they might get out ahead of the curve. And the overall theme is that if we might manage to merge ecological management principles with the new collaborative process movement, we might see the actual full-scale birth of a brand new approach to natural resource management and policy on the public lands, and in fact beyond the public lands.
Well, certainly that has been a major problem in trying to define wilderness and its future, and that is there seem to be so many it's just a perpetual tug of war with so many interests, and it's a natural outgrowth of we becoming more intelligent and expanding our populations and using up more of space that these conflicts arise. And in your book, you sort of try to make your point by looking at specific past and current issues. For example, you talk about the spotted sort of controversies, the spotted owl, for example, and fire on public lands, and of course the reintroduction of the wolf. It might be useful if you might focus on one of these, and of course fires are such an issue right now. How would you approach fires on public lands, and that can give us a better understanding of what ultimately happens with collaborative conservation, which is your mission?
Yes. In terms of fire, I think one of the important things to recognize is that historically, of course, we maintained a almost a full-scale suppression policy until the late 60s, early 70s, and then began to recognize that fire had some beneficial ecological effects on the landscape as a whole. And began to let some fires burn without suppressing them. Of course, that initial foray into a more natural approach to management ultimately culminated in the Yellowstone fires in 1988. And since then, the federal agencies have gone through a series of reexaminations that got even deeper during the early to mid-90s when we had a series of difficult fire years, and then continued further reexamination beginning in roughly the year 2000 and carrying on to the present time. A couple of other noteworthy points about fire. We've never really had much congressional direction in terms of fire policy. The agencies have been responsible for that. Of course, Congress has provided funding for fire policy. The various reviews that I referred to did a couple of different things. One, they acknowledged that fire was an important ecological process and in appropriate settings ought to be allowed to take its course, recognizing, of course, urban wildland interface problems and similar sorts of issues. And then secondly, these reviews noted that local communities need to be engaged in the fire management process and brought aboard. And the federal agencies have set about trying to establish some sort of public process to do that. One thing that has intervened that I should mention is that a year ago, Congress passed a law known as the Healthy Forest Restoration Act that was intended to speed up some of the thinning work that the agencies have proposed to minimize fire danger, in particular near built-up or urban wildland interface areas. And in the process, overrode quote some of the longstanding environmental laws that, of course, come into play whenever you talk about thinning or logging in an area. It remains to be seen exactly how the agencies are going to implement that. There's some concern in the environmental community that rather than doing thinning, this could turn into a full-scale logging operation. On the other side of the coin, some of the proponents of the law and this approach note that by providing some logging opportunities, we get some funding in order to proceed with this type of ecological restoration. If the local communities get involved in collaborative processes, they ought to be able to work out an appropriate way to approach nearby forests.
We have about a minute left. Define, if you could, a vision of that collaborative process. How does it actually come about?
Well, I think probably the most important points are that it has to be fair, it has to be equitable, it has to be open, that is transparent. There has to be accountability built into it. Representation has to be broad-based, including, obviously, people who live nearby, that is the local folks. But there are a variety of different individuals, groups that have interests in America's public lands and are, of course, as citizens, part owners. So a community of interest is one important way to look at collaborative processes, and I think the most effective way to make them work.
Bob, I want to thank you. I wish we had a lot more time, but people can learn more, first of all, if they want to, by going to the Wilderness Preserving Nature in a Political World, the Stegner Center Symposium up in Salt Lake City this weekend. There's still place, and there's spots for people to be there. Dave, thanks for being here. And also, you can look at Bob's book, Keeping Faith with Nature, Ecosystems, Democracy, and America's Public Lands. When we come back, we'll have more interesting things that relate to your world here on the Wild Side News.